WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common.
So, welcome to the Heritage Club. This is the sales floor. This is where you enter in, and you can check out the menus or speak with a bartender. We call them flight attendants here, since they help you get on and off your flight safely.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of the vibe we're going for.
That's Nikki John, CEO and founder of the Heritage Club in Charlestown. It's Boston's first Black woman-owned recreational dispensary. Massachusetts legalized recreational cannabis in 2016. According to the state, as of mid-March of this year, the industry here has grossed nearly $6 billion, with hundreds of retailers licensed to operate in the state, and that includes here in Boston. So as part of our field guide to Boston, where we aim to help folks better connect with the communities in our region, and as the unofficial cannabis holiday 420 approaches, we decided to visit the Heritage Club to talk to Nikki about her experience in the cannabis industry and to show us how to make a purchase. How'd you get into cannabis?
So one thing you'll hear is that my mom influenced me. She suggested that I open a dispensary. And I thought
Wait. Your mom influenced you to open a dispensary. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so she knew that I liked social justice work, and at first, and she also thought I smoked a lot of weed in high school. I did smoke weed in high school, just not as much as she thought. But I was like, okay, let me look into this. And as soon as I realized that the effects of the war on drugs were, not only is it still kind of going on today, but the impacts that were had were so deep, and that this new industry didn't include people that looked like me, I was like, well, that's enough why for me to like have the drive to complete it. And that made me look into how to get started. So the city of Boston had their equity program, and then the state had a social equity program as well. Mm-hmm. And I looked both of those up.
And those are programs that are designed to kind of address the harms of the war on drugs, which incarcerated a lot of Black and brown folks during that time.
Exactly. And so I looked that up. And so there were a few ways you could qualify. And it turned out that I qualified, which was really exciting. And I said to my mom, okay, like, this is the sign, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And the first step is finding a location. You have to have a location to apply. And I had come from 12 years of real estate. So I thought this will be easy, finding a location. So in 2019, I opened up an LLC. I didn't find a location till 2020. And that's when I really got started. But it took a little bit of time to get to that point. So that's where it all began. And that the rest is history.
Well, it sounds like it actually all began in high school. I mean, tell us about your interest in smoking weed, you know?
Yeah, well, so I grew up in a Rastafarian family. And for me, there was no stigma around cannabis. It wasn't weed, it wasn't marijuana, it was herb.
So perhaps that would explain why your mom was encouraging you to get into the business.
Exactly. And like, she knows I love business, but I was like, weed, like, wow, this is different. My goal was to create representation and to inspire anybody else who didn't have kind of something to look at. Once you know somebody else can do it, you're like, well, I can do it, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't have that right away. But as soon as I found other women in the space, other people of color in the space, Kobe Evans from Pure Oasis, I was like, okay, if they can do it, I'm going to pick their brain and then hopefully I can also do it.
You are the first Black woman to have a recreational dispensary in Boston. I mean, what has that been like for you?
It's so cool. It's been so cool when people come in and like they're like, are you the owner? I was like, yeah. But for me, it's like, I just work here. But they're like, well, I know your story. And they're like, I'm trying to do something too. So it's been super rewarding and exciting and important. I feel like that helps me stick it out during the rough patches. I think if you talk to anybody in this space, they'll tell you how challenging it's been. The industry is constantly changing. Yeah. The rules are changing. The players are changing. Everything's changing.
And like just from the business aspect, I mean, being a business here in Massachusetts, is the industry doing well right now?
I would say the industry is not doing well. There are a ton of manufacturers, a ton of growers, and there's a lot of extra product in the market. I think that is changing the pricing. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just that in order for everyone to really flourish as they thought they would when they got into the space and started investing in the space, it would be better if there were fewer licensees. There are just a lot of stores really close together, you'll see in some areas. And in some places, some towns have had very strong limits. So there might be only one or two shops. And that was based off of liquor licensing. So for liquor stores is where they got that minimum number. I don't know how that's going to change, but that's where we are right now, where there is just a lot of product out there.
What would you like to see done better?
at the state level, I think one thing that people didn't realize about the equity program is that you have expedited review, supposed to kind of help you get through the process more quickly. It turns out it only applies to them reviewing like the paper part of your application. It didn't apply to building inspections and things like that, which really could slow you down multiple months. And every month that you're waiting, you're paying your rent. So I think that's one thing that absolutely needs to change. The second thing is having a location before you apply. A lot of people have to pay holding costs for over a year before they even get to the starting line of applying with the state. And they were charging green tax. Green tax is just this idea that if you're in cannabis, it's not just the regular price. Yeah. Say if you're a regular business, they charge you $2,000. If you're in cannabis, it's $6,000. So you're paying that, and you're paying that while you're waiting to find out if you'll ever be able to open. So there are people in this process who are still working their way through.
And speaking of which, your journey, being a Black woman in this space, that's something, right? Because Black folks, you know, don't always have access to capital like that. Like, how did you make it happen?
So networking was really important. It was very difficult. You have to be willing to have tough conversations, explain to people why you are using the valuation that you are, how you're going to pay back, what's the return for them, why mm-hmm. this is a good investment. And so when this industry was booming, I think that was a very easy thing for a lot of people to see into. Whereas like right now, where the state of the market is, a lot of people are struggling with that.
How would you describe the cannabis community here?
Everybody's very welcoming. I would say the cannabis community is very, very relaxed. There's some really cool groups. Boston Trees is a great place to connect with people who want to chat about it online. But there's also different meetups and different events.
Is that a bostontrees.com or?
It's a Reddit group.
A Reddit group?
Yeah,
okay.
A Reddit group. But yeah, so that's a great way to just see what's going on, see what products people are talking about. When something new comes out, you get really honest feedback on there. So that's a good place to check out. And then in terms of like going to different events, there's pop-ups at dispensaries where you can come talk to the brands, talk to the growers who made it. And I think the music scene is like one of the biggest places where you're going to obviously find cannabis users mm-hmm. out in, on the commons in the summer when mm-hmm. Boston Calling, all of those things. So,
right on. Well, Nikki, we're going to take a break right here. But when we get back, we're going to buy some cannabis.
Awesome.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back at the Heritage Club with CEO and founder, Nikki John. Getting to the fun stuff. We want to buy some weed.
Yes.
Before we get started, let people know what will they need before they make their first trip to a dispensary.
Awesome. So when you're heading to the dispensary, you're going to need an ID. It's 21 plus, so it's really important that you have either a driver's license, it can't be expired, or a passport. Or another state-issued ID with a photo on it. And they will scan that and send you on your journey.
Mm-hmm. Also, whenever I go to a dispensary, I always carry cash. Could you talk about why that's important?
Yep. So dispensaries, because it's not federally legal, they can't always accept all different types of payments. I would always bring cash just to be safe. Sometimes they have ATMs on site, or you'll be able to use a debit card at some dispensaries. And some even have credit. We don't have credit here, but yeah, you can use a debit card or cash.
Okay. For folks who are new here, what should they look for when they're looking for a legit dispensary to shop at?
Ooh, yes. So that's important. So you have a license. They should have it at the front desk when you first walk in, just so that you know that all of the stuff in here is tested through the Massachusetts labs. They have labs that have to test every batch of items that come out. And every item in here is tracked seed to sale. So from when it's about 6 to 8 inches to when it's harvested, cured, packaged, it's tracked and it has a number, so you know where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't just walk in and like just pick up a bud and just say, okay, I want this one, right? How do you go about making a selection and stuff like that?
Yeah, so you'll be able to check out a menu. You'll be able to walk through and see what strains they have. Some places have bud bars where you can see what the strain sort of looks like, and you can also smell it. I'm really into, like, if you smell a strain and you like it, that means that it's the right one. Mm. So you might not just be having indica or sativa, but you'll kind of figure that out.
All right, and when you say indica and sativa, you're talking about the two different strains.
Yep, so those are the lineages. So, like, the types of flower that was grown. So technically, like, a lot of people don't love using those in the industry itself because they are a little bit limiting in understanding how it's going to feel to you. There's terpenes that kind of are a little bit better at explaining that, but broadly, you kind of know if you like indica or sativa. So typically, if it's like an indica flower, when people think of it, they think of, like, in the couch, that's something you take for relaxation and sleep. And then you have sativa. So sativas are actually shorter plants. They tend to be more orangey. They have more of that citrusy smell. And so that kind of leads into the terpenes.
And more of an energetic effect.
Exactly.
I like sativas for a sunny day going on a walk or something like that. And I like indica for exactly that, just being in the couch, eating some snacks.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah. Thank you for explaining all of that. I would like to make a purchase here at the Heritage Club. I think I want to get started with something simple like a joint. Give me a suggestion and then walk me through the purchasing process real quick.
Okay. Since you like sativas, let's head over to a menu.
So we're walking up to the counter. Now, I see you have the iPad. This is what a lot of dispensaries use so that shoppers can browse, right?
Exactly. Yep. So you're able to search on the menu and then we place an order kind of like you would at a restaurant. It prints a ticket and they fulfill that for you.
Okay. What would you suggest for a newbie?
So I actually would suggest this citral glue. I really like it. It's a sativa leaning pre-roll. And the thing that is great about it is something that's going to make you want to do something with your day.
What if I'm a newbie and I want something where I just want to chill?
So if you're looking for something to relax, I would suggest the LA Kush Cake. Let me grab that and add that to your cart.
Okay.
And the nice thing about that, so that one's 25%. So you could smoke more of it without getting too high.
Getting too blazed.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about some of the other options in case I'm somebody who doesn't want to smoke. Maybe I can't smoke, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're looking for edible options, we have beverages, gummies, chocolate bars, and tinctures. So the nice thing about all of those is, like you said, it's smoke-free. And they come in little 5-milligram doses for the most part. And it's a mix of, like, THC and CBD. So that's another good thing. If you're getting started, CBD is a great thing to mix in so you're not getting, again, the side effects.
I do like a CBD-THC blend.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that you'll be able to look into the cannabinoids. That's like all of when it says, like, the total THC, cannabinoids are part of that.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you what's included and you'll be able to see which ones you like best. So that's something to keep track of as you're trying new things is if you find a strain you love, see what's in it. See what the parent strain is, see what the cannabinoids are, and then try to find something similar.
Okay, well, Nikki, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for opening your space up and welcoming us here and taking the time to talk with us at The Common. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for flying with the Heritage Club.
That's Nikki John, CEO and founder of the Heritage Club in Charlestown. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Let us know what dispensary are you interested in visiting. Hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. And now, it is that time for me to let you know that The Common is produced by Caitlin Harrop and Franny Monahan with help from CCU. It's mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vitkus, and it's edited by Samantha Joshi and Ben Brock Johnson. And our theme music is Me from Hisu. And from the Heritage Club in Charlestown, I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you soon.